The courage of the Ukrainian people standing up to Putin's aggression touches all of us who value democracy. The Open Society Foundations have been confronting tyranny for decades. Join us as an enemy of tyranny by supporting Ukraine and everyone fighting to determine their own destiny around the world. Learn more at opensocietyfoundations.org/Ukraine.
For Politico, I'm Ryan Heath, and this is Global Insider. The global trading system has seen better days. The era of freewheeling globalization is in the rearview mirror, at least for now. Supply chains have been disrupted and lengthened first by COVID and now Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Many Western governments are freaking out at China throwing its economic weight around. That's led to a rise in industrial policy that's hugely expensive. At the global political level, the World Trade Organization is frequently sidelined in key debates. Instead, the trade action is happening at the regional level. Meanwhile, the US has signed exactly one new trade deal in the past 10 years. None of that means American business can't thrive. In fact, the biggest corporations have been booming. But organizations like the US Chamber of Commerce are worried that the US is missing big global opportunities, and that it's businesses which will pay a high price in this new geopolitical era. To help give us a view from other parts of the world, I sat down with Anne-Marie Trevelyan, the UK's Trade Secretary, their equivalent of the Trade Representative, and Singapore's Trade Minister, Gan Kim Yong. Minister Gan, let me start with you.
You and other ASEAN members have been engaging with the Biden administration on their planned Indo-Pacific economic framework. Tell us what will be needed from Washington to make that meaningful for you.
I think all of us understand that the Asia-Pacific region, including Singapore, depends very much to a open and secure, stable, as well as a rules-based trading system for us to grow our economy and create jobs. It is therefore important for platforms like Indo-Pacific Economic Framework to allow countries in this region to come together. And in order for IPEF to be successful, it is necessary for the framework to be inclusive, to be flexible. Let me explain a little bit. To be inclusive means that it should be able to include as many ASEAN members as possible. And some members may be ready, some members may take a bit longer to have their domestic consultation. And therefore, it should also be flexible so that members can decide particular areas of interest to them. And when they are ready, they can then join specific areas. Therefore, this framework has to be flexible and has to be inclusive. So this is a key feature of the IPEF that I think will make it successful.
And is it frustrating to be asked to join another process? Because we have CPTPP, we've got the new Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. So there are other processes and systems the US could be joining, and instead they're inviting you to be involved in a third framework.
Well, I think we have to understand that each country have their own considerations and also have their limitations and constraints. And therefore, we will need to find ways to work with different parties in the in this arena. And even within the Asia-Pacific regions, we have many platforms for collaboration. These various platforms will serve different purposes, and they will include their different parties. But I think collectively, it will form an inclusive and rules-based system that will benefit all the participants.
Great. Secretary Trevelyan, I'll bring you in now. Global Britain is a very compelling slogan and framework for Britain's post-Brexit future, but it's also a really tough geopolitical environment. So I was wondering if you can tell us how Russia's war is reshaping the way you see and project Global Britain.
Thanks, Ryan. Well, I think to your point about the disruption that the unprovoked and illegal war that Putin is raging against Ukraine, the disruptions that that has wrought, and the demonstration of why having trading partners who are reliable with friends and allies speaks more than ever to why we want to be building those trading relationships with our Indo-Pacific friends and neighbours, so that we can have more secure and broader resilient supply chains for our businesses. You know, as we know, you know, trade is between a willing buyer and seller, but it's also a demonstration of trust in that country, of working together, mutual recognition, all those issues which demonstrate what is so important when you see the disruption the system like Russia has created today, that actually we want to be working more closely than ever with those friends and allies around the world.
One of those trust issues one of those elephants in the room is obviously China's rise and the way it engages with the world. The US Chamber, our host today, put out a big study last year, really warning against decoupling from China and the costs of that. I wonder how you see those dynamics. That's a question to each of you, but I'll let you go first, Secretary Trevelyan.
Thank you, Ryan. So, you know, we have a very substantial trading, bilateral trading relationship with China, and it's very good, and our businesses want to continue to grow that. You know, on areas like, you know, the questions of national security, freedom, and responsibility, there's some of the challenges that we see and that businesses are challenged with in terms of forced labour use. You know, those are issues that we will continue to want to raise, as we did with any country where we trade, where we think there are certain issues which are not okay as far as the British people are concerned. We will continue to do that, and of course the Foreign Office has an ongoing role in that. But our relationship, our economic relationship with China is very strong, and I continue to discuss with businesses all the time how they can grow their markets, because there are, you know, huge opportunities there for our businesses.
Minister Tan, Singapore obviously is a very small, though prosperous country. How much of the shadow of China drives your need to engage with the US through processes like this new economic framework?
The recent events, including the tension between US and China, has caused many countries to think about onshoring or reshoring some of their manufacturing capacity. And as you rightly pointed out, I think this the outcome of some form of decoupling is going to be very costly for everyone. I think in that scenario, no one is going to be the winner. So I think it is better for us to continue to pursue multilateral cooperation among many trading partners.
The courage of the Ukrainian people standing up to Putin's aggression touches all of us who value democracy. As the largest private human rights funder in the world, the Open Society Foundations have been confronting tyranny head-on for decades by working to build vibrant and inclusive democracies. In the eyes of tyrants, everyday citizens are the enemy. Our decency is our strength, and our state of mind is the enemy of their sad, sorrow state. Join the Open Society Foundations as an enemy of tyranny by supporting Ukraine and everyone fighting to determine their own destiny around the world. Learn more at opensocietyfoundations.org/Ukraine.
One element of trade where this becomes very concrete or could be very alarming very soon is trade in food, where there are literally millions of lives on the line. And we've seen some countries move towards some what I would call damaging export restrictions or protectionism. They're driven by wanting to protect their own people, but the effects could be very severe around the world. Singapore is obviously an example of a country that has to import most of its food. But my question is to both of you, what can you do as trade policymakers to sort of ease those strains around food security and avert a big wave of global hunger and possibly famine?
Really importantly, the UK and the US are working very closely together to really support those open and predictable rules-based agricultural trade routes to try and help mitigate some of the supply chain disruptions and make sure that we can restore global food security, which has been, you know, very severely imperiled by Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine. So we, in the short term, coordinating with other international partners, the UK and the US, have already adopted, you know, unprecedented economic and financial sanctions against Russia. And we'll continue to apply pressure in every area that we can to reduce Putin's ability to continue this war. Because, of course, we need, you know, Ukraine, as described as, you know, the basket of the world. There's such an important part of their contribution to food security through oils, through wheat and others, that we need to find ways to stabilize that and help them to be able to plant and to be able to export their goods. So we are working very close together, and indeed we'll be seeing a joint statement on open and predictable trade in agriculture and food products at the WTO from the UK and I hope another 50 or so countries to really set out how important those open and predictable agricultural markets are, and that trade is key to mitigating both the short and indeed the longer term challenges around food security. And we want to do more as we need to, and obviously as we come towards the MC12 in June, we will be, I'm sure, discussing how in a practical sense we can help both Ukraine maximize its food production, but how we can ensure that the world food security challenge is mitigated as best as possible.
And is that practical discussion not shelved, but do we have to wait until June for that? I'm thinking practicalities around the port of Odessa, for example, where this situation is a great reminder that trucks can't replace what you can get out of ports if they're not functioning.
Well, indeed, and you know, the challenge is always, as you say, of shipping in different ways. Critical. So there are ongoing discussions, a number of countries working closely with Ukraine to help them think about how we can help them manage their translogistics in the short term and indeed the medium term, because some of the damage to ports there will have, you know, long-term recovery programs once the war ends. So there are ongoing discussions now about that between coalition of the willing to support Ukraine.
For Singapore, this is very close to our heart. As you mentioned, we import the majority of our food stock. So many years ago, we have started this on this journey of a supply chain resilience for our food supplies, as well as our medical supplies. I think we learned a very painful lesson during the pandemic that the vaccines and medical supplies, including masks, were disrupted because of supply chain constraints. And therefore, we have put in place a lot of measures to ensure that our supply chain is resilient. This includes a diversification of sources of supply, so that we have multiple sources, so that we are not dependent on any particular single source. And on top of that, it is also very critical to maintain a connectivity throughout pandemic, throughout crisis, even with the outbreak of the Ukraine war. It's important for us to maintain our connectivity with the rest of the world. During the pandemic, we have kept our ports, seaport and airports open throughout the pandemic to ensure that goods, critical goods, can continue to flow, including essential foodstuff. And I think Singapore will continue to play that role, not only to meet our own needs, but as well as to serve as a hub for the supply of foods in this region, as well as for the rest of the world.
Secretary, I was struck by your phrase, coalition of the willing, around some of those issues. And it reminded me of how fragile the WTO is at the moment. I was wondering how much hope you have for substance coming out of that consensus-based system, or are we really going to need to some other system or platform where you don't need a 100% majority to get things done?
So I think some of the challenges that WTO has been facing have proved difficult to move on, but you know, we look at the changing growth in economies over the last 20 years, the WTO needs to be fit for purpose and moving forwards to support all those countries who are trading, you know. And I think sadly the realities of seeing the war in Ukraine, and where one country has decided to behave in the most outrageous and illegal fashion, and the disruption that causes, will I hope bring everyone to the table to think about how we can work together to find solutions to these big challenges. Because, you know, at the end of the day, food security, fair trade, the opportunities for countries to grow and to see their economies become stronger and therefore be able to look after their citizens better is what it's about. So we want to make sure that we have those conversations. I'm sure it will be very frank, and I hope that actually if there are any silver linings to the horrors that are going on in Ukraine, that it will afford the opportunity for us to look very honestly about what free and fair trade means in practice.
Minister Tan, do you share that level of faith that the WTO is still useful?
Absolutely. I think it is important for us to continue to preserve this multilateral rules-based trading system. We mustn't forget that the WTO has served us well for many decades, fostering trade and driving economic growth globally. I think we are exploring various possible modalities, various possible approaches, one of which is what we call the Joint Statement Initiative, which allows a group of a coalition of willing, as you mentioned, to come together. Those who are ready and are prepared to move ahead, they can then introduce these initiatives. And as a sort of a pathfinder arrangement, and other countries or economies who are ready to join, we should keep it open for them to join in. This way, we will preserve the multilateral nature of WTO, but at the same time, allow the coalition of willing to be able to make progress. I think this is one modality that we are trying it out, and we have already seen some results in terms of the JSIs for domestic regulation, investment facilitation, as well as e-commerce, which is very important for us.
Secretary Trevelyan, I know the UK has been engaging, negotiating with several individual US states. I was wondering if you have any news or thoughts on which states hold out the most promise for increased trade with the UK?
So we are continuing to work at pace on a state-by-state discussion on a number of areas of mutual recognition of a number of things, and I think that's going really well. I'm looking forward to catching up with Ambassador Tai to talk about SMEs in a deep dive for our next trade dialogue, hopefully in Boston very soon, which will be great. So we are really looking at how we can help our UK businesses to build on that already amazing 200 billion bilateral trade relationship in ways that we haven't before, to take away, strip away market access barriers of all sorts, not only tariffs, of course, which would be a federal area. So there's a lot going on.
Secretary, Minister, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciated the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Global Insider. This podcast was produced by Cara Tabor. It couldn't happen without Brooke Hayes. And Politico's executive producer of audio is Jenny Armand. Next week, we're taking a break, but we'll be back soon with more Global Insider.